Hey guys, I'm Alex.
I'm Drew.
And on today on the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast, we're taking a look at A Human Target issues 4, 5, and 6 by Tom King and Greg Smallwood as part of DC's Black Label. Let's go. We have an action-packed episode of the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast for you today. We are covering issues 4, 5, and 6 of The Human Target by Tom King and Greg Smallwood. And boy,
yeah,
does a lot happen.
Yeah. I had read 1 through 4 back in early 2022, but I'd never read 5 and 6 until the morning that we're recording this.
Yeah.
And I almost had to like text Alex immediately afterwards. So seriously, I'm going to just drop spoilers now, even though it'll be a minute before we get to that. Mm-hmm. Issue 6 is something else. It's if you haven't read it and it is at your disposal, if you have access to DC Universe,
it's worth getting a free trial. Do they do 7 days?
Probably. Yeah. Like seriously, go read that and then come back and join us. Because we're going to have to talk about what happens.
Yeah. Don't let spoilers ruin the arc of this, the flow. Yeah. Like it builds into this and it's worth knowing what happens, y'all.
Because if we tell you what happens, you won't have that same, reaction.
We're going to talk about some high level stuff, but it's not going to be at the same level that you read this thing. After we get through issues 4, 5, and 6, we're going to jump into one of our favorite segments of Alex and Drew Rank the MCU. Yeah. And if you go to our down in our description, you can find links to the spreadsheet that we do where we've put together a full spreadsheet with all these formulas ranking aspects of the films being created in the MCU. And Drew and I are going through week by week and rewatching the entirety of the MCU, even as they are adding stuff on, and we will not stop. And we are ranking all of them based on things like the plot, the continuity, the sound design, the filming, the CGI, the character development, the representation. There's so many more categories. All the formulas are in there. You can go open it up in Google Sheets in your browser of choice and make a copy, and then you can edit it to your demise. Well, to your heart's content. You will die if you do this. But rank along with us. We want to know what you guys think too about these films. Right next to that area is probably a place where you can follow this podcast and share this with somebody and leave a review. Most importantly, that goes a long way to helping us do that. You can also follow us on all of our social media accounts. If you want to follow me personally, it's at Alex Wayne Miller, which is W-A-Y-N-E for Wayne, because I am Batman. Drew, where can they find you and our podcast socials?
You can find any way that you want to contact me or know what I'm up to at drewmorrismusic.com. And if you want to check out our podcast socials, Two Man Comic Book with a number 2 on Twitter, Two Man Comic Book Club elsewhere. Shoot us an email, twomancomicbookclub@gmail.com. Join our Discord. Yeah. I can't tell you what the link is to that because it's a bunch of gobbledygook.
But there is a
link in the description.
Yeah, probably right next to that spreadsheet. Again, check out the spreadsheet. It's completely free.
A link to where to copy it is right underneath the little description of what's happening in this episode. And right below that is the Discord link.
Yeah, keep in mind, you do have to make a copy. I think it's like file, make a copy before you can edit it. At first, you're just going to see my scores as of the last time that I input a movie, which I think was Guardians of the Galaxy, which we're going to talk about in our segment later today. But go along. It'll be a lot of fun to rank with us. Tell us what you think. Your scores don't have to match ours. You can disagree. We'd love to hear the feedback. Tweet at us. Let us know what you thought. Also, just let us know what you thought about these issues of Human Target. They were so, so awesome to listen or to read. The art is incredible. I mean, Greg Smallwood, man, I don't know what else he's done. I'm sure there's several other things. We can look that up in a gurgle break later. Mm-hmm. But man, the art in this is incredible. The storytelling is incredible. It's just awesome.
It just made me think of that scene in Napoleon Dynamite where Napoleon Dynamite's like, it's incredible. Incredible.
Drew, what you been reading, yo?
I read issues 4, 5, and 6 of this comic book since I spoke to you last.
Yeah, that is all I've read, too.
Not since I spoke to you last, because I spoke to you 30 seconds ago.
Right.
But like leading up to this podcast, I've been reading novels more recently. I keep meaning to tap back into Doom Patrol. Haven't done that. I'm a bad boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've opened the Marvel Unlimited app in a while.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling the next thing we read will probably be Marvel. So I'll jump into it there. So I'm naughty. But what about you? What you been reading, yo?
I have not done much better than that. I have been looking, though. I've heard a lot of hype around... is it the house, the nice house on the lake?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that every time I open DC Universe Infinite Unlimited.
I think I might jump into that like sometime really soon tonight. Okay. My mic keeps dipping in and I'm about to throw it across the room. Cranking the crap out of it.
Sorry if there's a click, 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 click. Is that a horror comic?
Yeah, I think so. Like it is a DC Black Label, which is the same kind of subgenre, or not genre, but subcategory that the Human Target is in. But I don't think there's any like DC hero characters in it. I think it's just James Tynion the fourth, I think, is doing that comic. I heard great things, and the art looks really cool. But
yeah, I've almost
keep hearing good things, and I just want to read it. So I might jump in there and see how many issues are available. And
if it's good, let me know.
I will.
Also, while we're kind of talking of indecision, if there's a series that you want us to talk about, let us know. Because at this point, we're probably going to take a pause with Human Target after this because.
It's still coming out.
It's still coming out. Currently, 7, 8, and 9, I think, are actually available. But we will probably wait to talk about it again until all 12 are available. So there's going to be 3 or 4 months before we can actually cover everything. So that's a lot of time for a lot of comics. Let us know what you want to hear us talk about.
I am trying to see right now the weekly releases on Midtown Comics. I know
this gurgle break, while Alex is looking up to that, looking that up, is brought to you by the Drew Morris Music YouTube channel. If you're curious about what I'm up to, I write music both in electronic and concert and marching formats, and I post YouTube videos about things like that, whether I'm messing with synthesizers or writing pieces of music. And I'm just telling you about it because I'd love you to check it out.
Yeah, so it looks like number 9 just came out. What is that? That's the regular cover? Okay, yeah, number 9. Man, I got to show Drew the cover to this. This is insane. Hold on. Let me zoom in. I'm for sure buying this.
Oh, wow. I was wondering when we were going to get to him.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I'm not going to say what because...
Yeah, we won't say. You could easily Google it yourself, Human Target number 9, volume 4 as it is.
If you would like to sponsor the next Google break, email us at twomancomicbookclub@gmail.com. I'll give you 5 episodes of Gurgle Breaks for $5.
Super cheap, bro. Let us help support your small business.
Yes.
Small local business.
Or yourself. If you just want us to talk about you.
Yeah, we'll sell out.
Yeah. It just like, this is brought to you by...
That's probably famous last words, man.
A friend.
How much... What would we... What would we not talk about for $5?
I mean, I can always just refuse it if it's...
Yeah, or we'll say all of it, but we get to decide how much of it's beeped out.
Yeah. This is brought to you by...
comedy.
Dot com.
It'll be hilarious. Cool. Do you want to jump into Human Targets 4, 5, and 6?
I thought you'd never ask.
Oh, I would ask. Let me just thumb through. I've got this... I do wish we had the video still... just so I could show you this like awesome collection I have. Okay, yeah, I remember now. I've reread so many of these in the last few days that I forget which one is which. So, last we left off in issue 3, Christopher Chance had just tricked Guy Gardner into giving up his Green Lantern ring and probably get him off his back for a while, because for the first 3 issues, he's kind of the guy that's getting in the way of everything and causing a lot of mayhem. So the next person on Mr. Chance and Ice's list to go find out who is actually responsible for trying to poison Lex Luthor, whom Christopher Chance actually consumed said poison, is the Blue Beetle, Ted Card?
Cord. K-O-R-D.
That's it. It was one vowel off.
Because they were curious if he had been one of the ones that bankrolled... Booster's Bagels, and perhaps in the process helped obtain certain elements needed for this poison.
Yeah, because it was still untraceable, and they found out that some of those elements might have been from a different time is why it was untraceable.
And also, Cord is a bajillionaire.
So, doing some review for these issues, 4 and 5 and 6, really, when you step like way back, they're kind of some quick moments of something that happens, but they are so complex, especially issue 5.
We're complex.
We're really going to not graze through that one, but 5 is a doozy, man. You got to read a comic book.
I was confused until like the last few pages, and I was like, okay, because I had a feeling that's kind of what we were getting at. But man, it's
they try something cool. I doubt it's the first time that something like that has been attempted, but it is complex storytelling for the medium, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a second. But for 4, the main chunk of what happens is they go to Blue Beetle, who is, he's got a lot of Batman vibes, you know, for people that don't know him, at least in this status. Kind of,
I would say combo Batman, Iron Man.
Yes, like he's a big businessman, has a lot of tech and all the stuff that comes out of the rooms and outfits him.
Yeah.
He's super smart. He's super strong. Mm-hmm. His powers have like the little scarab, right? Like the scarab becomes part of him and he gets the powers of like an ancient Egyptian beetle thing.
I think that's one incarnate. I didn't really notice.
He didn't seem to flex them that much. Yeah.
It's probably just one of those like, you know how this works.
So the bulk of this episode is they go to his headquarters, the Cord Industries building, Ice and Chance that is. And they confront him. They're like, hey, surely you've heard about what's going on at this point. We should have also mentioned in the last episode that it's kind of a running no that Guy Gardner had been telling everybody about Lex Luthor. So he's been like spreading this thing that Lex had basically been responsible for Ice dying and coming back. So he was another suspect for that. But he'd heard about all this through the grapevine. And while they're talking, he gets a call from his assistant that there's superhero stuff that needs to be taken care of. So they're having a conversation, but people need saved.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm sorry, I have to run from this. If you'd like, you're both super people. You can come along with me and we can continue this conversation on the go.
This moment had Watchmen vibes to me.
Yes.
With the owl. You know, it's just like somebody's up in the cockpit doing stuff and other people are just chilling out. Like Ice and Chance are just back there. I think Chance is still nursing his whiskey.
Yeah. And it's only it takes the edge off the cough.
Yeah.
So anyway, they go to help him. And Ice actually decides to suit up. Like she's going to help Blue Beetle do this. And the rest of this comic is that happening over and over and over. They think, we just stopped this. Now we can get back to the studio or the office and start talking about Lex. But they keep getting emergency call after emergency call. And they keep going with him to help because they're going to help these people. So, but more importantly through all this, we see Chance kind of standing in the background, drinking his whiskey, keeping his cough off, and Blue Beetle and Ice absolutely handling all these bad guys. Like it's nothing for them, and they're even having fun. Like it's a breeze for them. But even more so, like he's realizing just how absurdly powerful Ice is. And it's starting to give him like, I read it this way anyway, that he's maybe thinking like, okay, Ice is certainly capable of doing something. I don't know if he's quite pulling, and I didn't read it like that. He's maybe thinking, okay, this woman that I'm falling for is maybe the one that did something. But he is certainly, and they even point to as much at the end of this issue, that he's very aware of how powerful she is.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout, a second layer of this is when they're traveling between these crises, Blue Beetle is basically doing the... You've seen this before in a film. Like, if I was the one that was trying to kill you or Lex Luthor, which I'm not saying I am, but of course, that's what a murderer would say if he was doing it because he would try to hide his identity. But then you would know that, right? So why would I actually say it? So he's doing that bit, right?
Yeah. Like, almost playing devil's advocate, too. Like saying, you know, he really deserves it. By killing Lex, I'd be saving millions.
Yeah. So should I kill Lex? Should I want to do this? But I got to totally draw a line somewhere. I didn't do it. But of course, if I were the one that did it. So he's doing that game through all of this. And through that moment, as Drew said, he's in the cockpit driving. And we get these nice little moments between Ice absolutely wrecking villains. And then her being like sweet towards Chance in the backseat of the ship that they're in. And it's just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And eventually, the end of the night, they've spent the whole day saving people. They're not home yet. They have to stop at one of his hotels, one of Blue Beetle's hotels, and put him up there. Ice kind of gives Chance a knowing look and says, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Wink, wink. And leaves. And Ted and Chance stay at the bar to get a drink. Because despite all of the talking and the devil's advocate and the ridiculous talking through all day, he still hasn't really got to like interrogate him a little bit.
Yeah.
Ted starts drinking a lot. Both of them do, but he gets slurry. It's kind of some funny. There's some nice lettering work to show that he's slurring his words.
I feel like it was similar to Mr. Miracle. We saw some of that in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well done. And eventually he just asks the right question and Ted lets out that, let's see. I don't want to mess this up. Do you have it in front of you?
I do, but I may not be able to pull it up precisely.
He basically says...
Booster came to him for money.
Booster came to him for money. Right, 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 right. And he... No, no, no. Booster didn't want to come to him for money, but he knew how much... Or he offered, right? Because he was too proud to ask. But then John Jones?
Yeah, Martian Manhunter.
Martian Manhunter came to Blue Beetle for the same amount of money, and he gave it to him. So he kind of like backdoor funded all the supplies that ended up in this poison.
Mm-hmm.
And then he passes out at the bar, and Chance is like, well, there it is. Like in all the silence, I finally get the answer that I've been looking for all day.
And one of my favorite lines, it's completely irrelevant to it, but like the bartender earlier, who's just like, I've given you three last calls.
Oh yeah.
I don't care, you know, that you're the owner.
If you own this place.
It's there's Boston City ordinances in place. And he's like, I'll double your salary for
each other drink you bring me after this. And he says, done.
He's like, two more coming your way. I'm just like, dude, that was a good night for that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Doubling your salary for a couple drinks.
I mean, he's
talking about a tip
twice. So he's like tripling. He's got a good life ahead of him going forward.
Yeah, he's doing all right for the bartender.
Yeah.
The bartender life. So Chance has another lead now. Now it's Martian Manhunter, which relatively might be the most powered JLI member that he's going to confront next, probably in the next issue. So he goes back to his room. Now keep in mind, they all had separate rooms. Him and Ice did not have a room, but his door has been broken into.
And it's cold.
And it's cold to the touch. We're going to keep it PG-13 in here. We'll just say he goes into the room and...
I mean, she says through the crack in the door, all you have to do is push.
All you have to do is push.
Yeah.
She said, I can feel you out there.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen, y'all. Adult things. And I believe that is the end of the issue.
That's it.
The first time that Chance and Ice hop on the good foot and do the bad thing. And that was probably the most... straightforward issue of the ones coming up. Getting into five,
things get confusing.
I applaud them for trying to tell this story this way, but it is like you have to not be distracted to get through this. So we're going to John Jones now. When I say John Jones, I'm talking about Martian Manhunter. He's a shape-shifting Martian who is super powerful. You might have seen him in the Snyder Cut. I think that's the only live action adaptation in the films that we've seen.
In the films,
He showed up in the Arrowverse.
He's huge in the Arrowverse.
Okay.
He was in Smallville.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Really popular character in the DC world when it comes to it. Like, he's been a Justice League member of many different leagues. Also really cool in the animated series stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
actually...
Yeah, go ahead.
Guy who voiced him in the animated series a lot of times was the guy who played Bradley in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Oh.
He also played the Martian Manhunter's father in the Arrowverse.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Fun facts. That was your trivia.
Yeah.
So we open up issue 5. Ice and Chance are sitting at a restaurant somewhere.
Yeah.
Across from who we learn is Martian Manhunter, but he's in disguise.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, I think historically he's been a black character, or when he's in a human form, he's black, and in this he's white. Now, I think originally he might have been white, and they do seem to kind of be leaning in the old school interpretations of some of these characters, but modernizing them at the same time. I don't know. This might be just like a self-contained world that this story is happening in.
There was, I mean, if it weren't for one or like two scenes, two panels that I've seen in here,
right?
You could have sold it to me that this was the 60s,
yeah,
nonstop. except for two cars that I saw. There was one car that was like a 2000 model Jeep Grand Cherokee
right.
that was pencil drawn in. And then the Lamborghini looking thing that, like the Aventador or whatever, that
right.
that Gardner drove in front of a dump truck last episode. That was straight out of the late 2000s.
Yeah.
So yeah, we must be in current times, but they're definitely tipping a hat to the olden days.
Olden noir stuff. Mm-hmm. So the I'm going to get like pretty surface level with this and not get into this. This is far and away, I've read up through issue 8 of this series, far and away the most intricate storytelling, and you like really have to pay attention, and the art is key here. Mm-hmm. Not only is it very good, but it kind of puts you into different spaces and time and between memory and reality in current time. So what is happening is that there's an exchange happening. John Jones asks Chance to pass him the salt. And as he starts that, this trickles this montage of memories that have happened of Chance remembering a time when he was taught by, is it Imra?
I think so, yeah.
Imra of Titan?
Yeah. Saturn Girl, I think.
Saturn Girl, I think. Another deep cut again.
Saturn Girl is like from the Legion of Superheroes, far in the, like the 30th century.
Right.
But, you know, there's all kinds of time travel happening. But that's one version. It could be that maybe the original JSA version.
Sure.
She was in current times. I don't know. We didn't look into it too much.
Yeah. So this person was at one point teaching Chance how to essentially have like psychic warfare.
Yeah.
So when
she might have also been working with Lex.
Yeah. I think she was working with Lex in one montage. So basically we get this sequence of scenes of Chance remembering that he was being taught by Imra how to not only withstand or even like manipulate somebody being in his head and stealing his memories, but using that as like a sleight of hand or even a disguise, a human target, mm-hmm. to while they're looking at your memories, you look at theirs. Mm-hmm. So there's this, through this, there's several layers of this, and this gets tricky, and you got to really rely on the art and like kind of flip back and forth and make sure you're following along. But we see these memories of like a young Chance and his father dying, and we see memories of the night that just happened in issue 4 of him in bed with Ice. And throughout that, Martian Manhunter's own memories are being projected onto that and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Because while Martian Manhunter, I didn't say this, but it's kind of implied, is trying to get into Chance's head to kind of see what he's there for, to like get the truth. Because again, Chance is investigating Martian Manhunter. He's not going to come up straightforward and just necessarily say. Basically, Chance is letting Martian Manhunter see all these very intimate, personal memories of stuff with Ice, stuff from his childhood, stuff from him learning how to do this mental warfare, how stuff where he got shot, where he was poisoned, just... He's opening up to Martian Manhunter, making him think like it's working. You're such a good mental psychic hero. But he, at the same time, is reading Manhunter's thoughts, and he finds out that Martian Manhunter is having an affair with Fire, if you recall, the very close friend and JLI member of Ice. And that Fire got John Jones to ask Blue Beetle for the money needed to get that poison stuff so that she could go after Lex Luthor. And he finds out all of this, this mm-hmm. whole issue takes place in the exchange from mm-hmm. Chance handing the salt to Martian Manhunter.
Yeah. They even made a comment halfway through. Like that's whenever it started to happen. Like I think a conversation between Chance and Imra where they're like, how long does this take? And they're like, it could happen in the time it takes to pass the salt.
Right.
Yeah,
and so we see him like confirming that he gets that, and it's this really nice exchange, and I think it literally ends with him getting that information. Yeah. I'm just going to read the last page here. So it shows them sitting in this red diner, or it's like very red lit diner, just kind of like a color choice they use to like show this is the present time. And he said, I'd learned quite a bit. The Martian was scared enough that he tried to get in my head, and I let him right in where he could see everything, the gun, Lex, dying, Ice. And while he was looking, I got his dirty little secret and one that had scared him. His affair with Fire, her ask for money, him getting the money from Ted. Fire knew that Luthor had killed her best friend and Manhunter had given her the means to poison him. I passed the salt.
Yeah.
So all of that happens in a matter of mere seconds. So again, we said earlier, like surface level, this is like a very quick moment in the life of this 12 days that we're going through. But so much happens mentally in a snap of a finger that it really is like the most complex issue, in my opinion, thus far of the series, but also kind of flexes the abilities of the human target in that they kind of play off of the idea of him being a target, right? So not only can he make himself a target for villains that are going after other people, but he can make his own memories a coveted target that people go for while he has mm-hmm. other motives and can get them. So what'd you think of this one? It was way different, but good, I think.
Yeah, I was just so confused until I realized what was happening. And it was like, it's like watching four different stories unfold and wondering, you know, not knowing where their significance is until the very end. They're like, right. Oh, we was a little Martian Manhunter, a little this, a little of that, a little mm-hmm. up front, future, or a little present, a little past. Yeah.
What was so impressive to me is that they had to try to, while they were exchanging memories, and keep in mind, Martian Manhunter's unaware that the exchange is happening because he's so distracted mm-hmm. by everything he's seeing in Christopher Chance's mind, that the memories are crossing over, right? The depictions of like Chance laying in bed, Ice is laying on his chest and they're just talking. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it flashes and it's Martian Manhunter and Fire in bed.
Yeah.
In the same exact position or a mix between the two. Like they were getting, there was crossover of the memories exchanging. Super cool storytelling. You have to watch the art.
It's like
to get through this issue.
Back whenever I still watched regular TV. Mm-hmm. And commercials were all the time, and you'd get those little teasers trying to get you to watch next week's episode of whatever, where there would be all these wild scenes of like people kissing that should never be kissing or somebody dying.
Yeah.
And you realize it was all a dream, you mm-hmm. know, or it was all just somebody's imagination.
It does feel fever dreamish, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It totally did.
But a purposeful one. Like mm-hmm. it was all Chance's training and just so it's not just memories juxtaposing over one another, but you're also getting. It's kind of meta in a way that he is seeing the memory of Chance learning how to do what he is doing in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing the training in the memory. So that's the end of issue 5, but it does point us to the next thing, like the next thread. And we have kind of confirmation of what Ice's worst fear was, right? Like she does not want mm-hmm. her best friend to be even really looked at. Like she's like, you just need to trust me. And now it's more complicated because Chance's only goal during this was to find out who killed him, and now he's fallen in love with Ice. You know, like they're having kind of a relationship now, and it's just a few days in. So mm-hmm. definitely complicates things moving forward. And now we have issue 6. This is a doozy. Drew said it earlier, and then we'll get to it. But essentially, it starts with Chance breaking it to Ice. He's like, okay, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I just got this memory from him, and this is what's happening with Fire. And Ice doesn't want to believe it, right? She's very upset. She's mm-hmm. like screaming at Chance, like, I trusted you. You should have trusted me. How could you? How dare you? All this stuff. And she ends up leaving, right? Like, mm-hmm. and she leaves him in this kind of heartbreaking moment where they keep reminding us through these issues is his cough's getting worse. Like, he's still dying, mm-hmm. and she's kind of the only one he had, and she leaves. But despite that, he's got to finish his mission. He's still trying to figure out who killed him so he can get one last target off. He goes back, or he gets a call from Dr. Midnight, correct? Like, mm-hmm. who has been continuing your research. And he basically confirms, yes, those materials that you've seen from Booster's bagel shop, those are it. We found your poison.
Yeah.
But have you found your poisoner? Have you found out who did mm-hmm. this yet? And he's like, I still haven't done that yet. But again, Dr. Midnight makes a plea. He's like, hey, man, why don't you come to church with me? I know you're going through a lot. Sometimes I go there and I find answers to things that I don't find elsewhere. And Chance just kind of laughs and leaves and kind of feel bad for him. The guy's like trying to do something because he feels and he knows that Chance might be dying alone and he's just doing his part. But anyway, Chance then leaves and goes to Ice's house. And he opens the door and they make up pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. We'll spare you the details. You can read it. It gets a little icy.
Well, I don't know that they really make up, but they're not really talking.
Yeah. They're not talking, about but they're the important they're things. Doing things for sure.
What so, are they doing, Alex? Explain it.
They are making ice. Anyway.
Okay.
So they're laying there in their ice maker and they're not talking. And then suddenly, like, hear some noise, and you know, they're trying to like make small talk, and then this green energy thing breaks through the door, and
yeah,
Guy Gardner, the Green Lantern, comes back and he has his ring again, and he is pissed off that Chance tricked him into giving his ring to just some regular guy. And this fight ensues really quickly, and Ice quickly gets the upper hand. Like, she is livid mad that he broke into her house. She's sick and tired of him interfering, and he keeps kind of mansplaining to her, like, no, baby, you just don't understand. We're in love, and he's poisoning you, and you don't know us, and yada, yada, yada. And Chance is kind of just standing by, letting them duke it out, because obviously, power-wise, he has no chance between either of them, so he's just not getting involved. She's like giving him everything, but guys like Green Lantern powers are like keeping her at bay. And he's even like starting to like talk like, I'm going to teach you a lesson kind of stuff. It gets kind of gross. And we get like a callback to a moment that happened in issue 3. Chance is like inner monologue is saying like, it is taking every bit of willpower for Guy to hold off Ice in this moment. It's taking everything he has. And that's how the Green Lantern rings work, right? It's willpower.
Yeah.
So it's taking, he's aware like somehow that he's maxed out right now trying to stop Ice, and he's about to hurt her because he's doing all of that. And he says, all I need is to take one little piece of that, and I know that Ice can get in there. So he takes his gun again and shoots it at Guy, again to no avail because Guy's ring automatically stops it.
Because it's about not being able to see the guy behind the mask.
Yes.
He makes that comment.
Yeah, he makes that comment again. And it's such a nice moment because that's the one little bit of willpower, not Will Powell, that he needed to lose for Ice to get in. And she completely freezes him.
Yeah. Like
like T2 frozen.
We saw a scene earlier where she froze people in ice, but I'm assuming it's like something that can be
like thawed out or something.
You can thaw it out. So, yeah. But I was kind of curious what exactly she was doing. Like, what did her letting out look like? And apparently,
yeah. So she like fully expresses her powers here, and she like freezes like to death Guy Gardner. She kills him in that moment. And now suddenly, you know, we have like a different murder on our hands. And if there was any uncertainty about if he was alive or not, Chance then punches Guy Gardner's head off and it shatters on the ground.
And the only full panel piece in the entire book, like just this issue 6.
Right. And then they're just kind of like sitting there in this chaos of what happened. Like, it got heated really quick, and like she was having to use more of her power in the moment to keep him off. But then some of that power went away, so she like overloaded him and froze him and killed him. And then, like, there's this, her dead ex-boyfriend's body is shattered on the ground and still partially frozen. There's panels where it shows it, like, starting to melt. It's pretty intense. Drew did say an episode ago it really
packs a punch,
and he was not lying. Yeah. So they're, like, sitting there in the silence again. It's kind of like another callback to just a moment before. Like, the context just changed, though. And I think one of them breaks the silence. Ice goes, do you think anybody knew
he was here?
That he was here, which paints a picture, right? Like, you've waited a little too long if you're going to call the Justice League now to get in here.
Yeah.
Now it's like, why didn't you call us right away? And then Chance was basically like, hey, I've been tracking him for a while. I don't think anybody knows he's here.
He turned off his beacon within the ring.
Right. So they don't think people are going to know he's here. And now they're starting to question, like, what will the Justice League react like? Will they say, was there something you could have done other than kill him to apprehend this? Like, you're a superhero and a powerful one at that. Like, was killing him the answer? Did it warrant killing him? And they basically just kind of like have a moment of like, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
And Chance ends up leaving. We kind of assume that they cleaned up. He leaves to go back to Luigi's in his office, and he's talking to Luigi again. And Luigi basically says the same things. Like, there's some women you can't say no to, and some you can, and kind of gestures up towards his office, and he goes up there, and who else but Fire is sitting in Chance's office.
Finally made her not just B-roll entrance into this story.
Yeah, so the one who, as far as we know, was definitely trying to kill Lex, who is the cause of Ice and Chance's fighting and has been kind of a pinpoint of the action that's been going on, is finally front and center with Chance.
Yeah.
And it ends the issue. And that is the end of issue 6. And then they made us wait many months before they gave us the next issue.
Yeah. So Guy Gardner, he's a bum. Like he's a bit of a jerk, but as soon as I read it, I was just like, wait, did that really
did just
kill happen?
Him? Did they just kill a Green Lantern?
They had just talked about Ice getting killed. And she doesn't look as dead as she used to. So, I mean, there's ways around. Though, I mean, he was frozen and broken into tiny bits. So we would need like magic
to
bring
him
back. I don't know.
What did you think of this one and these series so far?
It was good. Like, surprise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, Mr. Miracle gave us a pretty intense issue 6 question mark.
Yeah, it's a good turning point for Tom King, it seems. He's kind of like, all right, here's a midpoint. Let's get a turn here.
Yeah.
So now we have what? So we step back. Chance is still dying.
Yes.
His relationship with the only person he seems to care for, and seems to care for him, at least on an intimate level, is soured a little. Like they're together and they just did this, but now there's an actual murder that they're responsible for on top of this. And like, there's this entire new ethics question of like, how much can they justify pointing fingers and trying to figure this out when this giant bomb just got dropped in their lap.
Yeah.
And just to add it all up, it ends with the one thing Ice wanted him to not do, which was confront Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like Fire is confronting Chance at this point.
Yeah.
Whew, I need a cigarette after that.
Fire had one whenever.
She did have one. She was probably lit it herself.
Yeah.
Great first 6 issues. I don't think we said it a whole bunch. You have to read these guys. Like, they're so good. Get your free trial. Go buy it. Maybe we'll put a link in the description of the first 6 issue collection, the one that I have here. It's a super pretty hardcover with like this nice paper cover to like sleeve to go over it. It's really nice. Drew was ogling it earlier.
Tis nice.
Cool. Any closing thoughts on Human Target 4, 5, and 6 before we jump into Alex and Drew ranking the MCU?
No, I mean, it's good. You said 9 is supposed to come out this week.
It is out today.
Okay, cool. So maybe, I mean, like I said, we probably won't cover these again until we can give you everything at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Make you itch for it, want to go find it out yourself.
Yeah, so it's good, y'all. Just seek it out. Read these comics with it. Comics are cool. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with Alex and Drew running the MCU for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. We'll be right back.
And we're back with the lightning round trivia, with questions faster than we realized we forgot. Lightning round trivia.
Yeah, we got to do that, and then we'll jump into Alex and Drew rank the MCU with our Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1.
For the Human Target trivia round, we are currently tied 1-1.
Yeah.
So.
You want me to go first? You went first last time?
You can go.
Cool. Mine is an answer that is in the comic book, but I didn't remember it. So maybe you will. What? It's a two-parter. What is Ice's full name?
Something really long that I can't remember.
And in her last name is the character, is a name of a character from a very popular
Frozen?
Disney
Isn't it
show
Olaf?
Called Frozen. Yeah. So Olaf. That's the answer for one. So I'll give you a point for that.
Okay.
But now you have to tell me her full name.
Oh, I can't. It's a bunch of stuff that
it's
couldn't.
Tora Olaf's daughter.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's her
name. I was
name
thinking like Olafson. Oh, Olaf daughter.
Okay. Olaf daughter, yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Ice rolls off the tongue a little better.
Yeah.
But I'll give you a point for getting the Olaf.
Cool. I gave you a point for Detective Comics last episode. So, all right. So mine is kind of a two-parter, I suppose. We're just going to go with Guy. Cool. First appearance of Guy Gardner.
Hold on.
Okay, we're good. I got a notification on my computer, but okay. I was afraid we'd lost recording.
Never.
First appearance of Guy Gardner.
Oh, sheesh. So he's one of the newer Lanterns,
if you want to give
right?
the book, year, which you issue. Could probably guess.
Yeah.
The year or the issue, yeah.
I don't know about the... I mean, I assume it's like Green Lantern... Green Lantern 381.
You got the Green Lantern.
Yeah.
it is not 381.
Yeah. And it came out in the year 1992.
1968.
Really? He's been around that long?
Green Lantern Volume 2, number 59. Now, I don't know what the chronological number would be.
Wow.
But yeah.
That is so, yeah. Wild.
But hey, we're 2-2.
Yeah. I'll take it.
And now... for a chance for you to take the lead, mm-hmm. which I don't think you'll get.
I won't.
In the movie Lego DC Comics Superheroes Justice League versus Bizarro League,
uh-huh.
who voiced Guy Gardner?
Is it an actor I would know?
I've heard of. As soon as I saw the name, I was like, that guy.
Nice. Let's see. I won't take too long. Do we have Jeopardy music on this thing? Oh, there we go. Who voiced Lego Guy Gardner? I'm going to say Idris Elba.
No. Yeah. Diedrich Bader.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, from the Drew Carey Show.
Right.
Guy. I just saw that and I was like, that's funny.
That is funny.
When I saw that, that put Guy Gardner in a different light.
Yeah.
Like, I need him played by a jerk, not a lovable goof.
Right, yeah. Especially after issues 1-6 of Human Target, man.
Yeah, yeah.
He needs to be an actual villain. Also, request James Gunn, if you're listening, since you're in the DCU's captain seat now, please do a Human Target movie based on this run by Tom King. I will give you $20 for an IMAX ticket.
Nice.
Cool. You ready for Alex and Drew rank the MCU?
I was born ready.
Awesome. If you've been following along, Alex and Drew Rank the MCU is a segment of this show where we go through and are ranking the entirety of the MCU with a Google sheet that we threw together ourselves based on different categories, such as the film, the composition, the audio, the CGI, the fan service, the character development, a whole bunch of other things. If you want to join along with us, again, links are in the description for you to make a copy of it. It's very important that you make a copy. It will not work any other way. And then you can review the movies with us. And this week we did
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1.
Speaking of James Gunn.
Featuring Awesome Mix.
Featuring Awesome Mix Volume 1. Y'all, I wasn't sure. So we had a lot of movies coming up to this in Phase 2. But then there were three really back to back. Next week's is another good one. We'll get to that in a minute. But we did Winter Soldier last week, and I was like, is this going to win Phase 2 for me? Like, mm-hmm. it's really, really up there as far as MCU films. And I was like, well, Guardians 1. So let's talk about, like, the landscape whenever we get this movie. We have not seen Cosmic Marvel MCU yet.
Other than
really,
Thor.
Other than Thor.
I mean, and Thor is more like realms. You know,
yeah.
I'm not as much
it's a little more magic.
Space,
yes.
As I'm thinking other dimensions, even though it's kind of both.
But this is the first time, in my opinion, that Marvel was like, okay, we've had our Iron Mans. Now, also keep in mind, Iron Man was not as popular, not even close to as popular as he is now before the movie.
Yeah.
Like everybody, it's easy to think since like 2008 when that movie came out, like, oh, Iron Man, of course, he's like the best Avenger. He wasn't even in like people's top 10 before then. He was just like, oh, we have access to this character. He did relatively well in the comics, but there haven't been like this. It's not what it was. What it was then is not what it is now. I'll just say all that. Like Robert Downey Jr. absolutely speared that character to like the top of Marvel. Like he's still got an ongoing comic. He didn't even used to always have one of those. So big deal. Same thing for Chris Evans and Thor. So like they have these properties, but they're like really developing things now. And they're like, okay, let's go into space and let's go with the Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, these characters were not at all super well known in the comic community, even.
I might have known that they existed.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I did.
I
don't know.
Like, did this come when?
2014.
Oh, no. We weren't podcasting yet.
No. No, we were not podcasting.
I bet I didn't know they existed.
I don't think I did, man. And I was like in the MCU and like reading comics and doing daily pulls. Chris and I would still go to the comic shop. Shout out to Chris Flores. And talk about like completely blowing expectations out of the water.
Going in, assuming it's going to be terrible.
Yeah, everybody was like, oh, okay. Here's where Marvel finally trips and falls. Like they've had hit after hit after hit. Even Thor Dark World made millions and millions of dollars. Like even the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, it did well. They've had relatively measurable success through everything. And everybody's like, oh, okay, here it is. They're going to get a little too carried away. You know, people want this to feel more grounded. Like the superheroes have felt like have an air of like real life and reality gravitas. To them. Yeah, gravitas. And then we're going to space
with
Chris Pratt, who up until this point had been like
Andy
from Parks and Rec and a few other things. And he's like this chubby, he looks like me.
Fell in a giant hole and broke his legs.
Yeah, like he was this ridiculous pick. He was not at all the superstar that he is now. And then we're going to do a talking raccoon and a talking tree voiced by Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
And who's this Gamora? Like Zoe Saldana was probably the biggest cast name, I think, at that point. Yeah. She had probably done Avatar at that point. I don't know if she had or not, but she's been around. I didn't even know
she was in Avatar.
Yeah, she's Nefertiti, the main female lead.
I watched Avatar one time.
Yeah. So she's been in all the franchises and big parts. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, people were like not just not sure what to expect, but almost just like expecting it to fail. Like, what is this crap? James Gunn blows it out of the water. Yeah, like, and to this day, this film is one of the favorite MCU films for many, many people, despite Infinity Wars and Endgames.
Opening scene.
Yeah.
You have those like kind of E.T. vibes. I don't know, because it's back in the 80s, 70s, whatever. And, but then you kind of have this instant connection, and then scene two drops you into current time and lets you know what this movie's going to be.
Yeah. So we find Star-Lord, Chris Pratt,
listening
on Morag,
listening to a Walkman, you know, dancing, picking up tiny little rodent things and singing at them as he's looking for a mystical orb.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just comedy.
It becomes like a space comedy kind of, but also, I don't know. We can dissect elements of the film, but let's just go ahead with our gut rankings. Where did you put this one?
9.5.
Now, what did you have for Winter Soldier?
9.2.
So you had it over Winter Soldier.
I sat there thinking about it for a minute. I was like, Winter Soldier, like there was no question. It was really good. Mm-hmm. Much better than I remembered, but we all know I didn't remember it very much. And the whole time I was like, Winter Soldier is good. But Guardians of the Galaxy, I finished and I was like, there's no way that I can't put this ahead of it because I loved every second of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the music delivered, like story, the camaraderie, like everything. I was just like, I would rather watch Guardians of the Galaxy than just about any movie in the MCU. Just because like I put it on, I know it's a good time. It just
feels good, man.
Yeah.
I give it a 9, so I give the same score for Winter Soldier because they're so close for me. But honestly, for a lot of the same reasons, like it's firing on all cylinders and nonstop.
One thing though, I've probably listened to the Guardians soundtrack countless times. I mean, I didn't buy it on tape as much as I wish I would have. But I have, you know, the MP3s of it, and I listen a lot. So, like, I knew those songs were coming up. And just, like, that collection, that little microcosm of music. Like, the film score is good, too.
Sure.
But it's
iconic, I think, at this point. Like, it's the thematic to the characters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, the orchestral film score is good. Yeah. But, like, the other music that they use is just, like, it's great. So, that helped elevate it to me.
So I should say also, this might be the biggest, if there is a flaw in our ranking system, is that our music scores are weighted very heavily, kind of by necessity, out of necessity of them not getting too complex for just the average year. So if you don't know, Drew and I have a pretty extensive music background. So while we could have like broken down the music categories into like pretty snooty, nose up in the air, music theory driven things. A, that would take us out of the film if we're like doing score study on what we're listening to and like really trying to analyze it at that level. And then B, it would make it almost completely inaccessible to anybody that wanted to do this with us, because very few of our listeners are also big music nerds. So the music score is literally just broken into the music, like the music that you hear, whether that be pop songs or stuff that was orchestrated and designed for this film, and the sound design. That's the entire audio score. Mm-hmm. So two captions versus the video score having five and the story having several and all the extra stuff, the general effects. So if you have good music and good sound design, you're going to get a lot of extra points for that section, which is going to give you a boost. And Guardians has both of those in abundance, I should say. James Gunn seems to really have good taste in music, and he is not afraid to put it in his stuff. What did you give? Let's see. I gave the music a 10 out of 10.
Me too. And there was no question in that for me. Now, it's just because of my connection to it, but also the music is a character.
Oh yeah, for sure. Film, so. And it adds so much heart and emotion to it. Mm-hmm. Something I want to talk about that this also won, one of the subcategories in the video, is the color. Mm-hmm. The color of this film is right up my alley. It's super contrasty and rich without being like oversaturated.
Except for, some of the aliens are super saturated, but it's like,
them. But by design, like it's an effect more than I don't know what I'm doing with the color wheels on this when I'm color timing things. Yeah. So the colors are just, it's a very, very pretty film in just about every scene, and not just because it's in space. Like the self-contained stuff in the prison, it all has a mood and a vibe. The skin tones are really good, even despite some of them being green and orange and blue.
Yeah.
Like, it just adds like a richness to the visuals of it. And Drew and I have really nice TVs, and they're the same TV. So we both are able to kind of measure that one together. So up until this point, some of them have hit like an 8, but I mean, other ones have been like, now don't get me wrong, none of them have been just flat out bad, but we're talking about like from a storytelling standpoint, we want them to have like some character to them themselves, like something that kind of differentiates them from the pack instead of a very flat, monotone looking use of color. Mm-hmm. You could argue that we get a little bit in the weeds in that category as well, but I do feel like it's easier for the average viewer to pick apart if they liked the color of something more than musical details for that category. What else did you give high scores for in this?
Every category had at least one 10, if not multiple 10s, whereas I don't know if I gave... The entirety of all of my rankings before this, I think I've given one 10. And that was for, it looks like, Captain America Winters. No, that wasn't that. It was Thor Dark World for world building. Because they but everything has a 10 in it.
Sure. I didn't give out a 10 to everything, but I gave some out.
I mean, every category has at least one 10, if not multiple 10s.
Yeah. Another really strong part of this is the world building and the continuity, and then the character development, man. Like,
and obviously, like we said, the comedy.
Oh, the comedy is also, I mean, it's like the, maybe still, I guess Ant-Man kind of counts as like a comedy thing too.
Yeah.
All the MCU films have some attempts at humor.
Yeah.
These are just straight up, they're funny, man.
Yeah.
Like, they're real funny. I think that's why so many people relate to him. Mm-hmm. They laugh. Chris Pratt is part of that.
Doesn't take it too seriously.
He gets to improvise on every project he's on because he's just a funny person, and it usually works. The lowest score far and away is a representation score this one.
Mine too.
I think Zoe Saldana is maybe the only person of color in this, and there's
I don't remember, but
lesser and lesser female leads that are relevant in the characters. So,
yeah.
I mean, not every film is going to have that, but I mean, we got to score it, call it like we see it, you know? So, but despite that, man, it's a strong film. Where did this end up score for you and in your ranking?
92. It's the first overall to crack 90. And that puts it, not just in first, but in first by 10 points.
Wow, a 10-pointed Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
That is your two-man hot take of the day. That's fine. Yeah. I also have it high at 87.88, which also does put it in first place, which surprised me.
Yeah.
So
that surprised me a lot. Like,
yeah.
After all of your talking of, but I mean, sometimes you just, whenever you go in bit by bit with the rubric, mm-hmm. things come out shocking.
Yeah. I mean, if you're thinking like to the rubric, okay, rank this out of 10, what did you think about this specific element, the color, the mm-hmm. music, the mm-hmm. character development? Getting back on the character development, guys, the way that James Gunn developed all these new characters. So
I mean, I felt for them.
Immediately.
Instantly, yeah.
So think about this. The Russo brothers, when we get to Civil War in three or four films, they had all these characters to play with already that are introduced so we care about them. And then simultaneously, they introduce Baron Zemo, Black Panther, and Spider-Man into the MCU all in one film. And they do it so well that by the end of it, you care about all of them, despite the relatively very little screen time that any of them got.
Yeah.
I bet it's like less than 10 minutes for both that they're actually on screen doing something meaningful.
Yeah.
James Gunn has a full film of all new characters.
Yeah.
All of them. Every single one of them. The entire five of the Guardians of the Galaxy, plus Thanos' first actual appearance in the movie.
Like his first, like, oh, this is a thing.
Ronan. And
we were talking about like how, like the guts mm-hmm. to take the most important villain in the first,
the whole saga,
30 movies or whatever, was dropped into a film that nobody knew of. Like people,
that nobody
like,
was excited to
yeah,
see. Really,
yeah, it was just like with a bunch of nobodies.
Yeah. It's an incredible feat. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just like I care about them. Oh, that guy's funny. I care about this character now. But there is like heartfelt depth, full emotion range showing moments for mm-hmm. all of the characters on the Guardians of the Galaxy. Peter Quill, there's a ton of them. One of my favorites, this is like so subtle thing, but Groot, when they get to nowhere and they're walking around, they take 10 seconds to show him sprout a little flower out of his hand and hand it to this little girl.
Yeah.
And then they just go on. They don't say anything else. And it's foreshadowing to mm-hmm. him literally sacrificing himself at the end by sprouting things around all of his friends and family and saying for the first time ever, we are Groot.
Yeah.
And he sacrifices himself. And it's like so beautiful and powerful. And we get these rich moments with Rocket when they go to prison. No. When they're drinking at the casino, and Drax insults him again because Drax, mm-hmm. things go over his head. And he like falls apart because he's like getting called this rodent. And there's like this rich, before I go further, have you seen, I doubt it, you haven't watched the new Guardians trailer, have you?
No, I haven't.
I won't spoil it, but I am not ready for that movie. I think I'm going to cry like a fool. Oh man. There's a lot of stuff in Guardians 1 that just is like rich character development. And it's just these moments. And when you step back, you're like, oh my God, I'm feeling emotional for this talking raccoon voiced by Bradley Cooper, who's got a gun. And it's, but it just works. And the CGI is incredible. Did I give a 10? It's got to be, I gave it a 9.2. I'm changing that right now. It's a 10. there's nothing, what's wrong with the CGI in that movie? Anything? I can't think. Was there anything that was just like, that could have been better?
I can't remember. There was what movie it was that I've watched recently where there was a certain flame explosion that looked weird, but that might not have been this movie.
Right.
I don't know.
I think it's a 10 out of for CGI, like Groot, mm-hmm. Rocket, Thanos, a bunch of aliens. I mean, some of that's practical for sure. Yeah. And there's puppets, but it's handled well. All the spaceships and the battles and the Infinity Stone stuff. And then like it ends with like somehow the goofiest, but also like most unique and still appropriate heartfelt in that like Peter Quill like challenges Ronan to a dance off as a distraction, which is harkening back to his like love for
Kevin Bacon,
for Kevin Bacon of Footloose,
which was a nice, we finally got a nice deliverable on that with the holiday special,
yeah. Spoiler alert. But it's guys, it's just good. It makes sense that it's the first when you look at it. I don't know that like if I had to pick right now, go watch one of these movies, that if it would be like, all right, let's watch Guardians again. But man, it's up there. And I really can't imagine it falling out of the top 10 by the time we're done with all this. It's just that good. Yeah. There are films that are better, believe it or not, but they're better for different reasons, and it is not at all that Guardians is a bad film. It's just, I think, objectively not at this point.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts on Guardians 1?
Yeah, I'm just really curious to see what happens with my overall placements of everything once we get deep down to the end of the Infinity Saga. I don't know.
Let's rank what we have right now. I'm going to make sure that I have a few in here that are things we have not covered yet. Mm-hmm. Drew and I have ranked a few things that are more modern as we've watched them, just to kind of get a
calibration.
A calibration is a good way to put it for where our scores need to be based on modern things. And now that doesn't mean that we're like pulling our punches at all, or yeah, pulling our punches is a perfect way to say it. Like, if something's good,
unlike the Human Target.
Yeah, unlike the Human Target, definitely pulling their, or not pulling their punches.
Yeah.
So we've calibrated a few things that are already on my list. I'm going to skip them.
I haven't pasted my stuff over yet because I'm a horrible human.
So I'll just give you mine. I don't think it's way different than yours, but it's different for sure. So I have Guardians in first right now overall.
Yes.
Then Captain America the Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Then the Avengers.
Yes.
Then Iron Man 3. Is this where we change here, right?
I have Iron Man 2.
Okay, yeah. Then I have Iron Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
What's
third for me? The next one's Thor.
Okay, wow. Then Captain America and the First Avenger.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Okay. Yeah, Captain America. Yeah, okay. That is actually where Captain America.
Mm-hmm. Then Iron Man 1.
Same.
Then Thor the Dark World.
Yes.
And then Thor...
Okay, that's where mine changes, and mine goes to Iron Man 3.
You are a psychopath. And then The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
The only thing worse or better than The Incredible Hulk is... Or only thing worse than Iron Man 3 is The Incredible Hulk for you.
Yeah.
We're quitting the podcast. Let's see. So that's first Guardians, second Winter Soldier, third Avengers, fourth Iron Man 3. That switches for you, right? Yeah. So 2, 3?
Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, and Thor are the ones that are in the
different place. They're inverted if we have some differences there. So 5, Iron Man 2, 6, Cap America, the First Avenger, 7, Iron Man.
And you know, honestly,
8, 9, 10, yeah.
That's what... I feel like Captain America, the first one, should be higher, but the ratings put it where it is.
Yeah, it's where it is. I mean, that's fine. And then also, I'm really curious to see, like, where our averages put them whenever we have it done. We'll have to have Nick make another formula that can pull for multiple sheets.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the most surprising thing is that Guardians is not, it's not surprising with hindsight, right? But with foresight, it would be unthinkable.
Yeah.
Like if we could somehow be like, oh yeah, Guardians is going to be
Guardians of the Galaxy is higher than the best film of
the first two phases. Now we have two films left in phase two.
Yeah.
The next one, I think, might be very divisive for both of us. It's Avengers Age of Ultron. It's our second Avengers film. And a lot of people do not like this movie.
I don't remember. I mean, I remember a few things and feeling like I like the way some of it was played out. What is it James Spader?
James Spader is Ultron, yeah.
Amazing.
It's amazing. So good. Yeah, it's strong.
So good.
Yeah.
And I mean, we get Scarlet Witch.
We get Scarlet Witch. We get Quicksilver. We get the Claw.
Oh, that's right.
It's our first little winks at Wakanda. We'll get into it, but it's strong for me, and it's very important for the entire arc, or sorry, the entire Infinity Saga is like a point of thing. It deals with a lot of things that have happened since the first Avengers film. Mm-hmm. Since we've had solo films for the core of the Avengers again since this movie. And very curious to see what you think about this one moving forward. And then to close out phase two after that, we have Ant-Man. Which
has always been one of my favorites. But thinking of it from a, just on my memory, I'm curious to see how it stacks up against Guardians.
I feel like we're also going to be split on that one as well. Maybe more so than Ultron.
Yeah. We'll see.
It's fine. It's good. But we'll see. We're going to watch those in the coming weeks. And we'll have those on upcoming episodes. Again, if you would like to do this ranking with us, it is absolutely free. In the description, make a copy, put in your own scores, just rank everything out of 10, and the formulas will do the math for you, and you can rank along. It is not too late to jump on at this point. and go back and watch the movies at your own pace. But we would love to hear your rankings. If we get enough people doing this, we will have like a community ranking and take averages from everybody. So your score will affect the definitive ranking.
You can help us make
the MCU.
The two-man ultimato ranking.
Yes, ultimato.
I keep making that comment because I watched the Community Blanket Fort versus Pillow Fort Ken Burns episode.
Classic.
What's his face?
Abed and Troy.
Troy says, I want the all tomato.
Yeah, I want all of the tomato. Cool. Any other thoughts before we get on out of here?
No.
No thoughts. All right. You guys know what to do. Like us, follow us, share us, write a podcast review. If you do, we'll read it on here. And we're super excited to keep going on this. Read The Human Target. And we'll be back next time on the Two-Man Comic Book Club podcast. Oh, one thought from
Drew.
I did
think of one thing. By the time this comes out, it should be quite apparent that because of our unintended hiatus.
Our hiatuses?
Yeah, our hiati. It was a little too late for us to do a two-man Christmas Secret Santa this year.
Yes, we're very bummed.
This is my apology to anybody who was hoping to participate in that in this year, because it was just, we weren't sure if or when we'd be able to get things going again, and didn't expect to be. We just wanted to make sure people had plenty of lead time. So hopefully things, hiatuses don't jump out and we're able to reconvene our two-man Secret Santa in time for next year's holiday season.
Yep. We look forward to doing that. Please forgive us. And I guess until next time, guys, we'll see you later. Bye.
I hit the button too late. I'm sorry.
It's fine. I still love you. Two-Man Comic Book Club podcast is hosted by Alex Miller and Drew Morris. Our graphic and logo work is done by Tessa Price, and our original compositions and theme music were composed by Drew Morris.
Hey, Alex, say something for a tag. Thanks.
There you go.